If you had the chance to create a new TV show, you'd have to come up with a few critical elements. The concept: a woman talks to dead people and solves crimes. Well, that show is called Medium. You need a setting, a Chicago emergency room maybe, and some characters, of course. Let's say four: a wisecracking detective, young hunk detective, bodacious assistant DA, aggressive chief prosecutor. You need a twist to intrigue the audience. See, they're not only stranded on this deserted tropical island, there's something out there in the jungle. And you need a title. In a few minutes, we're going to talk to one of the creators of the hit TV show Lost, and he'll tell us what it takes to make a successful program, and then it'll be your turn. As we focus on the upcoming television season, which is currently being unveiled in Los Angeles, we have an email challenge for you. Send us your idea for a concept, a setting, a character, and a twist, and we'll create our own TV show. Once we've assembled the idea, the location, four lead characters, and the twist, we'll ask for a title. No reality shows, please. Strictly scripted, and one idea per email, if you will. The address is TOTN at NPR.org. Again, that's TOTN at NPR.org. Later in the program, who buried the sex scene in Grand Theft Auto and why? But first, next year's Couch Potato Diet. If you have questions about new shows, old shows, about sitcoms or dramas, about what the networks think they're doing, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Brian Lowry is chief TV critic for Variety magazine. He joins us now from his office in Los Angeles. Good of you to join us on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
Any must-sees that that have been previewed thus far?
Well, you know, it's always early at this stage of the game. I think in general there's several things that look kind of promising. A few comedies actually, which look pretty good, which is sort of reassuring. And then a real crush of sort of science fiction type shows, which seem somewhat modeled after the success of Lost, which should be interesting to see how those play out. And those are really tough to gauge. I mean, last year, when Lost went on, a lot of people, including myself, were skeptical that people would stay with it, and yet it became one of the big hits of the season.
Well, here's a clip from ABC's Invasion. A child named Rose describes an unusual sighting she had the previous night to her Uncle Dave.
I saw a bunch of lights in the sky last night. Dad thought they were sparks, but they were much bigger.
Really? Where'd you see them?
Landing in the water.
Cue the theremin. That sounds a little like somewhat between Lost and a little like the 4400, which was a pretty big hit on cable.
You know, there's a little, I mean, the problem with all these shows is at this stage of the game, I call them all butt-widths, which is, you know, they all sound like, it's a lot like Lost,
fill
in the blank.
Yeah.
And Invasion is actually being put on directly after Lost. So they're trying to create a 2-hour block where people will sit and sort of buzz and speculate and get sucked in week after week. That's one of those examples of a show which is not terribly well done in terms of the pilot, but it's just interesting enough that I'll probably give it a second look. And in a way, that's all these pilots or these prototypes are really supposed to do. If the concept can reel you in, then that hour, its job is really to say, well, you know, I'll take a look at it, and now I'm curious what episode 2 is going to look like.
When you said you're seeing some promising comedies, are you talking about half hour sitcoms or hour long things?
Mostly half hour sitcoms. It is interesting because those lines are blurring a little bit. You have Desperate Housewives, which actually was just nominated for an Emmy as Best Comedy. In the same way Ally McBeal was a few years ago. But, yeah, there are some half-hour sitcoms. Some of them single-camera shows sort of shot the way The Wonder Years was. Probably the one that's getting the most buzz, actually, is a series on UPN called Everybody Hates Chris, which features Chris Rock, the comedian, narrating his youth as a kid growing up in Bedford-Stuyvesant. And it's... it'll be interesting to see how that does on a network that has a fairly limited comedy sort of footprint.
We have a clip from that show as well. Here is Chris Rock describing his walk to junior high school along with his younger brother. No
time. Keisha was the girl next door. At 13, I didn't know a lot about sex. but I knew she had something to do with it.
Hey, Drew.
Drew?
What's up, Keisha?
You know her?
Yeah.
Drew was so cool, he got girls at 10 that I couldn't get until I was 30.
And again, that's his younger brother he's talking about.
Right. And it, there is a there's a really wonderful scene in that in the latter part of the episode where he gets into a fight in school, and he's convinced that, you know, school fights always end right away, and instead the fight goes on, and you see flowers blooming and closing, and, a clock going around and around. It's really quite clever.
Pages coming off the calendar, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see if we can get some callers on the line. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. Our email address, totn@npr.org. Don't forget our email challenge. Let's talk with Damien calling from San Francisco.
Hello, Neil.
Hi, Damien. You're on the air.
Hi, yeah, I've seen that the pilot for the Chris Rock show, and it's a really smart, edgy show, that's able to confront issues of race and class the way Chris does in his stand-up comedy, you know, but without his vulgarity, and it's definitely, like, the best, it's probably one of the best shows that UPN has ever gotten before, and it has, appeal for more broad audiences than, UPN is usually stereotyped as just a channel for black audiences. This has more appeal, and similar to Dave Chappelle's show.
How did you get a chance to see it?
I'd rather not comment on it.
Damien, you're ready. No, you're ready to work full time in the biz.
Yeah, I think the NCAA might be on the other line. So.
Well, Damien, thanks very much for the call.
Sure.
Appreciate it. Another show that pretty much on the same issue, we see Boondocks in the comic strips on the comic pages of the newspaper. That's a show being developed for Cartoon Network's Adult Swim.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, Aaron Magruder is obviously a fairly controversial a figure, and certainly has brooked a fair amount with the strip. Adult Swim is one of those interesting, you know, relatively new avenues where Cartoon Network has set aside this block to do adult programming late at night, and they do some very, very edgy animated stuff there. And I think the good thing is, if you're going to do the Boondocks and be true to the strip, that's probably one of the only ways you could do it and really do it justice.
Are there any shows you've seen thus far that you really hate?
Yeah, I've actually seen several that I, you know, one of the problems with being a critic is I like to say that we watch everything so you don't have to. And there's 35, you know, between 35 and 40 new series premiering on the 6 broadcast networks in the fall. And, you know, out of that, if you get a half dozen that you're excited about, that's a pretty good year. So there's several things that I would steer clear of, and I think they'll become fairly obvious as people start to see more of the promos for them.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Sean calling from Detroit.
That's right. Hi, how are you doing, guys?
Very well, thanks.
Great show, by the way.
Thank you.
I just wanted to throw in a quick comment. You had mentioned about sci-fi series along the lines of Lost and whatnot. I wanted to bring attention to Sci-Fi Network's Battlestar Galactica, which leaves my stomach in knots, hanging off the edge of my chair every week.
I would agree. I think
that's a great show.
One of the best shows on television right now. I actually just put together a list of the 10 best individual hours I watched last season, and one of the Battlestar Galactica Galactic episodes made the list, and it's really very taut and tense, and much, much better than the original series on which it's based, which is very rare with a remake like that.
It is. Normally the remake's a pale imitation. In this case, you forget Lauren Green.
Well, I'll never forget Lauren Green, but but you're right. I mean, it's a completely different show, and they've updated it, and it's and like all good science fiction, it comments on what's going on today in very interesting ways.
Thanks.
Also, I would just want to make one other mention, and that is perhaps the only sci-fi series I've seen that genuinely looks like their vehicles are interacting in space, because they do not deal with any of the same issues that you would have to deal with going through air or anything like that. And also, explosions don't get louder through a vacuum, which, of course, would be impossible.
Sean, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
Bye bye. As you look at these, a lot of the more interesting shows seem to be on cable stations. UPN, you mentioned sci-fi for Battlestar Galactica, Comedy Central, obviously for the Dave Chappelle Show, cartoon for the Boondocks. It seems to be much more diverse, and obviously HBO and Showtime have their hits too.
Well, it's true. I think, you know, cable has actually done a tremendous job of putting on, I mean, if you look at broadcast television and cable, I think the best analogy would be the Cineplex versus the Art House. And broadcast television still has to bring in a larger audience, and cable can afford to kind of pick at niches. And, you know, if you look at Oscar nominations over the last few years, oftentimes it's those smaller films that do better with critics and Academy voters, and it's sometimes the same in television. You actually saw a little reverse of that this last year, though, when Desperate Housewives and Lost went on ABC and were both huge mass appeal hits and also critical hits.
Now, I've seen Pat Mitchell, the programming chief at PBS, quoted on a couple of political issues. Any new programs coming out of PBS?
PBS, you know, has an interesting mix of programming coming up. They just have they recently brought back the series Wide Angle, which is one of their returning shows, with Bill Moyers as host now, and did a really impressive documentary about the siege on a Russian school in Beslan, which kicked off the season. So I'm excited about continuing with that. PBS is an interesting other topic entirely because obviously the channel, the service has been under some siege. But I think there really is some value to it, especially if you look in the areas of children's programming where commercial television is really not doing a very good job.
Brian Lowry, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Brian Lowry, chief TV critic for Variety Magazine, joined us by phone from his office in Los Angeles. Don't forget our email challenge today. We want your ideas for the next smash television hit. Send us on email an idea for one element of a new show, a concept, a setting, a character, or a twist. TOTN@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Dead bodies and gorgeous DAs, doctors and scrubs with messy personal lives, four single women in a big, exciting city. Does it sound old? As television critics see what's in store for this fall, this week and next, we're discussing what's on the docket and what makes a show a success. We're also giving you a chance to create our own new TV show, something you wish you could see on TV. Here's how it works. Email us with an idea for an element of a show. We have our setting. It's in Kansas City, a company that writes humorous greeting cards, but we still need characters, a plot, and a twist. Email us, TOTN@npr.org. Send us a concept, send us a title, send us some characters, TOTN@npr.org. And joining us now is someone who knows what makes a good TV program. Damon Lindelof is co-creator and executive producer of the popular ABC show Lost. He's with us now by phone from his office in Los Angeles, and it's nice of you to join us on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you so much for having me.
Where did the idea for Lost come from?
It was basically hatched by Lloyd Braun, who at the time was the president of ABC, and they have these summer retreats, one of which they've just finished for this year. But the executives sort of go down and basically sort of look at their networks and say, you know, what kind of ideas do we want to do? Do we want to do more procedurals? You know, do we want to do doctor shows? Do we want to think a little more outside the box? And basically, it was Lloyd's idea to do a television show. How can we take the successful elements of reality, in that case, you know, Survivor, and make a drama out of it?
Mm-hmm.
So his idea was, I want to do a show about a plane that crashes on an island, and that was pretty much all he had. And they developed it over the course of the year internally, and basically sort of waited until the last minute, which is exactly when sort of, you know, exciting things happen, and they brought in J.J. Abrams, who was basically doing Alias for them at the time, and J.J. had about 10 or 15 different projects on his plate, and basically said, I have no time to do this, but if you want to bring in another writer, maybe we can work on it together. I have no idea how to do a show about a plane that crashes on an island. And then I came into it, and I said, I have no idea how to do a show about a plane that crashes on an island, but after a series of a couple conversations we began to think, well, if the people on the plane were really, really interesting and mysterious, and the island was even more interesting and mysterious than they were, we might be able to get 5 or 6 episodes out of the concept, and sort of the, you know, the rest is history. We never, ever in a billion years anticipated that anybody would want to watch it.
Did anybody ever say out loud, and this is just our perception, and maybe not yours at all, but did anybody say Survivor meets Twin Peaks?
No, because Twin Peaks is sort of a network, a very bad network buzzword, because although I was a huge fan of it, and it is sort of critically lauded and made a huge imprint in sort of the episodic television world, that the it is very bad to reference that show to the networks, because it was only on for a year and didn't generate a lot of money for them. So you don't want to say it'll be the next Twin Peaks. You know,
it's a show that also
we'll do it for a year and then, you know, and then it'll be done.
It's a show that famously lost its way as well.
Well, exactly. I mean, the thing is, Twin Peaks was predicated on sort of a simple concept, which is who killed, you know, Laura Palmer. It was all based around the single mystery, and when you basically ask the audience one question, when you inevitably answer that question, the show is sort of had its half-life. It's over.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it was. And, you know, Twin Peaks was always, for me, more about character and tone than it was. I wasn't as interested in who killed Laura Palmer, but the show wasn't able to sustain after it revealed who it was.
So this coming year, I presume we're going to see intensive agriculture, maybe raising some animals?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, obviously, I think the first season was, you know, was about sort of getting acquainted with each other and sort of learning what their situation was. It really only covered their first, you know, 45 days on the island or so. And obviously, I think it's the sort of, you know, human condition to, in that situation, try to get off the island.
Mm-hmm.
And as they've begun to realize that they are not going to be able to do that for whatever reasons, this sort of society-building aspect of the show is going to sort of kick into a higher gear this year. So all the sort of they already made a garden last year and haven't found any animals to quite domesticate, although there's indigenous boars on the island, which they've been eating, that sort of stuff will you know, manifest itself more in season two.
You also worked on a procedural, a crime show, Crossing Jordan.
I did.
How is this different?
It's much different. I think that, you know, the thing about procedural storytelling is, you know, every week it's a sort of more self-contained episode. You're approaching it as, okay, who got murdered and why? And, you know, and every sort of beat of the story is in service of what is the clue trail that is leading towards the inevitable capture of that killer, much the way that Law & Order or CSI does it, but they have all these shows have different models. For a show like Lost or maybe like Desperate Housewives or Veronica Mars, which is another show that I'm really into and came out last year but doesn't get talked about as much, that those shows are chapters in a novel, an ongoing novel, each one sort of inheriting from the chapter that preceded it, it's a true serial, like The Sopranos as well on HBO or Nip/Tuck, so that it's very hard to watch the episode sort of in the bubble of not knowing anything that preceded it. So you're really, you know, you have to do it one episode at a time, as opposed to the procedural shows that I've worked on, where you literally have different writers sort of spinned off into 4 or 5 different rooms, each one of them working on their own sort of self-contained pod, each one of them not aware of what the other writers are doing, and it doesn't really matter. But here, you have to have much more of a hive mind in sort of the telling of these stories, which is both exasperating and exciting.
Damon Lindelof, good luck with the second series of Lost.
Thank you so much, sir. Love the show.
Thank you.
Okay.
Damon Lindelof is co-creator and executive producer of the show Lost, and he joined us by phone from his office in Los Angeles. Now, don't forget our email challenge. We have our setting. Remember, it's in Kansas City, Missouri, at a company that writes humorous greeting cards, but we still need the concept for this movie. We still need some characters, and we need that twist that really makes it interesting. Email us, TOTN@npr.org. TOTN@npr.org. Joining us now is Jonathan Storm. He's a TV critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's with us by phone from his hotel in Beverly Hills, where he's attending the annual Television Critics Association Conference. Brutal work, Jonathan. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, many indigenous boars here as well.
And I'm sure some of them are being eaten.
Who knows?
Is the sitcom back this year?
Yes, it is.
And is that a good thing?
Sure, why not? It displaces Temptation Island and Watch Me Dance and Not Fall on My Face. So it's a good thing because there's a little art involved, I think, more so than there is in a lot of these throw-up-against-the-wall reality shows.
Are they still mostly, we found a comic and we're turning his act into a sitcom?
No, none of those this year.
Oh, good.
No, yeah. Well, Chris Rock is kind of the focus of one of the new shows, but it's not, oh, it's Chris Rock and we're turning his act into a sitcom. In fact, they have said definitively that there will be no celebrity stars or actors on the show to detract from the story, which is the story of Chris Rock at age 13 going to an all-white high school and living with his tough but fair parents.
Let's get some callers on the line. This is Jennifer. Jennifer's calling from San Antonio.
Hi. I'm wondering about the new show that David Spade is going to be doing on Comedy Central. I understand it's going to be kind of a Daily Show knockoff with an entertainment, a pan on the entertainment industry. Is that true?
Yes, it is. It'll be, judging by the usual thing that David Spade does, it'll be, 96% David Spade and 5% knockoff, making 101%.
Have you seen any of those episodes yet?
No, I have not. Okay. I am not a big David Spade fan. I think he's kind of a one-note guy. But some of my colleagues have seen them, and they find them to be amusing, let's say, if not guffawing.
Okay. Well, that's good enough for now. Thank you. Okay.
Thanks, Jennifer. As you look at these shows, I mean, again, how many of these do you see in a day?
Well, they send the pilots out in little packages, each network, and they sent them out probably a good month ago. So it depends. Some critics just close all the doors and turn on the air conditioning and watch them all in one day. I've watched them over the course of a month, and so it's just one or two a day.
And so it's I would assume they just turn into a blur after a while if you just load too many in one day.
Well, no, they don't. It's I don't know if it's because we're all such highly honed professionals and we can differentiate between. I would say that if there are 30 new shows, and I didn't do my research to get the number exactly, but 30 is pretty close. Probably 15 of them just drop off into a blur. You're right, but mm-hmm. but maybe five are so bad that you remember them, and 10 are good enough to remember at certain parts in the list.
Give us one or two that stick out positively, and maybe one or two that come out the other end.
Well, for me, it's very interesting this year. The critics are really. I do a story every year from here. There's about 100 critics from out of town, and then about 200 critics from L.A., a lot of whom are somewhat less than big time. But anyway, and talking to them, they are have widely divergent views on the same show. And here's a perfect example. Mandy Patinkin stars in yet another procedural show, and people get chopped up and put through the meat grinder, and it's all scary and horrible. But I like that show because I think what it's done is taken the best parts of every little thing from CSI and Law and Order and even Medium, and it's taken, there isn't one new thing in the entire show, but they've taken all the good parts of a lot of other shows and made it a good show. Other critics, it's called Criminal Minds, it's on CBS. Everything on CBS is about crime. They have 7 nights, solid crime.
They're going for crossover, CSI Mayberry, I think is
That's good. That maybe in your little experiment you're doing in this hour, that's what'll come up. CSI Mayberry, but they do have a sort of a CSI Mayberry. They have one called Close to Home, which features Jennifer Finnegan, who was an ingenue in The Bold and the Beautiful for several years, very sweet looking young girl. She's just had a baby and she's gone back to her job in the district attorney's office in this nameless suburb, which is supposed to be Indianapolis, which isn't really a suburb, but anyway. And so it is. It is in effect CSI meets Mayberry without Andy Griffith and none of the shaking of Don Knotts.
That's a pity. We missed that.
Well, That's a long time ago.
There's also a new show that somebody has described as The Other West Wing. This is a clip from Commander-in-Chief, The President Has Died. Vice President Mackenzie Allen, played by Gina Davis, decides to take the oath instead of resign. This eclipses the ambitions of Nathaniel Templeton, the Speaker of the House.
Nate, I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to take the oath of office. I'm going to run this government. And if some Islamic nations can't tolerate a female president, then I promise you, it will be more their problem than mine.
Why? Why do you want to be president?
For the same reason Teddy Bridges did. Because I believe the people of America deserve to have a president.
No. In this room, where it's just you and me, just the two of us, the answer that you should be giving me is that you want to be president because you want the power. You want the power to control the universe.
That's not me.
Well, that's the problem.
Donald Sutherland, a long way from the original MASH. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. So have you had a chance to see Commander-in-Chief?
Yes. Critics are agog over Gina Davis's lips. Mike Duffy's wife and he's from the Detroit Free Press, had a long discussion about what she had done to her lips. Ed Bark of the Dallas paper is very upset because Gina Davis's lips come into the room about 20 seconds before she does. And somebody else, I think it was Charlie McCall in the San Jose Mercury, is just in love with Gina Davis's lips. So I think the lips have kind of eclipsed the hard drama that you heard in that drapery shredding clip. It's not as bad as that clip makes it seem.
How could it be?
Exactly. Donald Sutherland is wonderful. He's very, very sort of evil. But it's just, I hate The West Wing, too. I don't like a show. I don't like these shows that offer an alternative government to the masses and kind of numb them from looking into the current government.
Hmm. Let's get another caller on the line. Ben calling from Lawrence, Kansas.
Hi. Yeah, I wanted to call to advocate for my favorite show, Arrested Development, which is, in my opinion, is the best show that no one watches.
A lot of critics feel that way, don't they?
You and every critic. That's part of the problem this year with these new sitcoms is a lot of the critics love different ones of these sitcoms. There's particularly one on NBC called My Name is Earl. It stars Jason Lee, who has been in a lot of the Clerks kind of movies, Chasing Amy, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. He's a little bit of a cult actor, very good. And My Name is Earl is very, very funny, and a lot of critics are worried that it's too funny to be successful as a TV comedy, much like Arrested Development.
Yeah, that's too bad, because I understand that Arrested Development is in danger of being canceled. And
well, they've brought it around for another year. I've been doing this probably a little too long, and I get behind shows and get all excited, and I was not behind Arrested Development so much, but every year you do this, you pick some poor little show that's just so great, and you just wish that people would watch it, and every year they go down the tube. So Arrested Development has got one more year at least.
Well, I'm doing my best to spread the word.
Thanks for the call, Ben.
Thanks.
It's so interesting how fans get so involved in their shows, and I get emails from just about every single show that gets canceled. How can I save this show? How can I get a letter writing campaign? The loyalty that people put on TV shows is really astonishing.
Mm-hmm. But the trend in Hollywood is always to, if somebody has a success, let's see if we can make another one.
Oh, boy.
Desperate Housewives last year. Are there knockoffs this year?
You know what, Desperate Housewives, I think they would like to have some knockoffs, but I don't think that people are capable of really making a knockoff. Also, it takes a little bit more time. People don't realize that a lot of these shows that are knockoffs do not originate when some producer sees, oh, look, there's Desperate Housewives, let's start making a new show like Desperate Housewives. It takes longer than that to make a new show. So what happens when you see all these copycat shows, they were already kind of bubbling around on the stove, and when a show succeeds, the door is then open for others like them. So what happened this year, not Desperate Housewives, but Lost. It was a big success. You just talked to the producer. And so there are always 8 or 9 science fiction spooky shows bubbling in the development.
But very few set in a greeting card company in Kansas City. We're still awaiting more of your suggestions for characters and twists and scenarios for our TV show, TOTN, at npr.org. Back after the break. This is NPR News. Right now, we're continuing our conversation about the upcoming TV season with critic Jonathan Storm. And you've sent us your ideas for a new TV show. We'll put all that together and see what kind of a show that makes. If you have questions about the upcoming season, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Jonathan Storm, the Philadelphia Inquirer, is with us. Let's get another caller on the line. And this is Carol. Carol's with us from Boulder, Colorado.
Hi. So much. You know, I'm wondering, I can remember when I was growing up, my mother and all her friends would sit down and watch Poldark and all of these costume dramas, or as the woman on the phone said, period dramas. And I'm wondering why there aren't more of those shows on television, because I know my friends and I can't get enough of Pride and Prejudice.
Two different words, money and age. Costs a lot to make them. Kids don't like them. And kids, you know, we'll go all the way up to, let's say, 35 on that one.
So it would be death to say Masterpiece Theater meets Twin Peaks.
Right.
Yeah, then you'd be dead on every front.
Some sort of costume drama where, you know, where there's lots of fighting and people stabbing each other with swords, and it seems like, you know, kids love that sort of stuff.
Well, I think you're going to see Rome on HBO starting at the end of August, which is, you know, a certain kind of costume drama. They say that it took them 14 months to make 12 episodes. The average TV drama takes 8 days, so to make one. So I think money is primarily the word. But the other thing is that there aren't any. Maybe the next Desperate Housewives is going to be some, you know, 19th century English swashbuckling period piece. I don't think so, though.
Well, thank you so much.
And God, you know, God bless the British and God bless Masterpiece Theater, because they do it as well as anybody. It's possible also that by comparison, the shows that the networks would do in the United States wouldn't be as good.
Well, we're going to get to our own Talk of the Nation created television program in just a second, but there are several calls all with the same theme. So, Jonathan, I'm just going to present them to you quickly and see if we can dispose of them. Whatever happened to Joan of Arcadia?
Joan of Arcadia was replaced by Jennifer Love Hewitt in her nightgown with her large breasts, which apparently has more of an appeal to a younger audience than wonderful, thoughtful, scripted drama about God. The CEO of Viacom, which owns CBS, said basically that he thinks that the Jennifer Love Hewitt show, which features a woman who speaks with ghosts, he said that talking to ghosts skews younger than talking to God. So it's the same sort of problem. We talked about it a lot yesterday. The head of CBS Entertainment, Nina Tassler, was here, and Joan of Arcadia was one of her pet projects. And I think what happened, you know, from a sort of a scientific point of view, is the show changed directions after about 10 episodes, and all of the people who tuned in looking for Highway to Heaven or, you know, spiritual inspiration turned it off, and that didn't leave enough people left to keep the show on the air. It's one of the great disappointments. I spoke earlier about writing scads of stories, you know, defending shows, please don't kill them. And Joan of Arcadia was one of them. And the people who have called in, tune in come September at 8 o'clock at night and see what's replacing it. They will be much more disappointed than they are right now.
Very quickly, will Father of the Pride still be on?
No.
What happened to House?
House is going to be on, of course. Father of the Pride was terrible. I can't imagine anybody would want to have it on except for Jeffrey Katzenberg, who is the producer of it. House, of course it'll be on. There's different kinds of scheduling, and Fox has a very different situation because they have to have American Idol, and they have to, so they run their shows all in a row. Mm-hmm. House will definitely be back. House is a gigantic hit on Fox. House will be on for years and years. Do not worry about House.
Well, now we're going to present you our program. And again, if you're just joining us, we've asked our listeners to come up with a setting for a new TV show, some of the main characters, the twist that gets people intrigued in the show. And collating all of your emails for us is Senior Editor for Special Projects at Marcus Rosenbaum. This is the most special project he's ever been associated with. Marcus, good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil. Nice to be here.
So we know that the setting is Kansas City, Missouri, in a greeting card company that is humorous cards.
Right. And now let me tell you some of the characters.
All right.
Okay, first there's Edward. Edward is a once well-known poet who has slipped into the obscure world of greeting cards. He says he wants to get out, but he keeps getting drawn in deeper.
Uh-huh.
Then there is Brooks. Now, Brooks is an Ivy Leaguer who is arrogant and whom everybody's out to get.
Arrogant Ivy Leaguer. How original.
Then there's Selena.
Mm-hmm.
Selena's a greeting card writer who secretly writes and collects dark sentiments for each customer. She plans to send them all out on the same day, giving everyone cardiac arrest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the plot twist is that all the funny greetings start to come true. This really makes Selena's plot scary when people figure out what's going on. So you see, Neil, what we really have here is a show that has lots of two-liners, not to mention picture gags.
Jonathan Storm, what do you think of this? We got to come up with a title for this, too. Maybe just Greetings.
Well, it could be Caroline in the City, which was about
That's true. It was about a greeting card company. Yeah.
It sounds to me like it's a sort of a combination of a sitcom and a supernatural scary drama.
Yeah, well, that's why you have to have that twist.
I don't know how, you know, when the guy's head gets chopped off, what kind of a joke do you put behind that?
Ooh, that's going to be a pretty tough thought balloon, but I guess that's why we hire writers, isn't it?
I think I've lost my head.
Go away, Marcus. Thank you very much for being with us.
And you're welcome.
Thank you very much to everybody who took the time to come up with our ideas for us. And we may see this next year you may be reviewing it next year, Jonathan.
I hope not.
Jonathan Storm is a TV critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and he joined us by phone from his hotel in Beverly Hills, where he's attending the annual Television Critics Association Conference.